fighting for America.
Yeah, cop just got shot.
I saw him. He got shot in the face.
Yeah, he got shot. I saw that. Laid on the ground. I didn't get him, but I saw him. They taking cover. It was none of the protesters. It was at least 500 feet up Tiffin. We didn't see it.
Fighting for Idaho.
Seriousness, the violence that took place, it's really sad and really shocking, and we hope to never hear of something like this again. You know, I mean, this is really just terrible, terrible.
Fighting for you.
How much traffic control does the city of Eagle need, for crying out loud? Everybody understands green light, red light.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
He's a five-year-old.
Winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Living the dream each and every weekday, 5 to 9, Kevin Miller in the morning. At 580 KIDO, we're joined by our great friend Bob Dane from FAIR. Mr. Dane, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Great. How is life east of the Great River?
Well, on the immigration front, any remaining vestige of integrity in our immigration enforcement system appears to be disappearing faster than Hillary Clinton's emails, unfortunately.
Congress
doesn't seem to care as much about immigration as the emails.
Well, I've been following what y'all have been doing at FAIR. And it's quite disturbing when we talk about the sellout of both Republicans and Democrats. And when you, Bob, as you've reported in the past, when most of the country does not want amnesty, when most of the country wants these folks held accountable, both parties just punt.
Yeah, sure. Look, this is everything FAIR has really been worried about for 36 years, Kevin. This green light on the amnesty, although it's hung up in the courts right now, but that could turn on a dime. But look, you've got a rogue executive, Barack Obama, literally hijacking immigration controls by rolling over the separation of powers, by imperial edict enacting amnesty, and you have an apathetic Congress refusing to challenge him. That for decades has been the apocalyptic scenario that we've been concerned about. The Republicans clearly did not play to win, and now you've got a major national policy, immigration, quite literally under the control of one man, the president. So you've got apathy, you've got ignorance, power, greed, both parties, and in the White House. And now you've got a crisis of very large proportions. Literally any limiting control inherent in immigration has now quite literally disappeared. Enforcement is almost non-existent. But it goes beyond that. I think we need to seriously question how representative our government really is anymore. The president has been fortified to do what he wants, when he wants, and what he wants in complete defiance of public opinion. You mentioned that. Sure, this flies in the face of what most Americans want, represented by most polls, and Congress won't act.
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder, where do we go? And I thought the Republicans were going to stand up for the country. I thought they were going to say no to amnesty.
Yeah, everyone thought we had a mandate back in November when we promised to vote for them in exchange for the promises they made to rein in this president. Well, by the way, Kevin, why is it whenever the Democrats have a mandate, they deliver on it?
Right.
You know, let's face it. Let's give them credit. They got Obamacare through. They've got amnesty through. But when Republicans win and have a clear mandate, we get the middle finger wagging at us. Look, the only charitable thing I can say about the Republicans in this recent amnesty battle, the inability of unwillingness by them to defund amnesty, is that, you know, when the need to fund Homeland Security and the desire to defund amnesty both meet in one bill under a tight deadline, yeah, that's a recipe for a political nightmare. The Republicans were in a tough spot. I know that. And I would say, you know, I think most of them, and you probably agree, that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and House Speaker John Boehner, you know, I think they detest that President Obama is abusing his office to enact this unlawful amnesty, and they understood they had to try to restrict him from using public funds to carry it out. But the problem is those funds were within the DHS appropriations bill, and they were worried they were losing the PR battle in the public, so they just surrendered. But look, Republicans always lose the PR battle because because it's very difficult to dispense the truth. The truth was that it would be the president shutting down DHS, not the Republicans. But when you've got the mainstream media
right,
really acting as the satellite White House press office, it's very difficult to message properly. You know, we'd have a lot different outcomes in a lot of policy areas if we had a mainstream media that wasn't so biased.
Well, Bob, you've been at this for years, and I've been blessed to have you on in a number of locations, but I've never seen anything like this when we're talking about the media, that if the Republicans are right, they're wrong, they're evil. You take a look at gas prices, you take a look at the employment numbers, you take a look at the disaster that is the Middle East, Hillary Clinton's emails, and they've made the Clinton coverage seem objective, how they treat this president. And we don't even have to talk about the illegals, the false narrative that we have no rights as national citizens here, that everybody should come here.
You know, it's astonishing how biased the media is on this immigration issue. You know, they really fail to remember the true essence of what immigration policy is. It's designed to serve our broad national interests, not to service the needs of corporate CEOs looking for cheap labor to drive their bottom line, or the Democrats' desire to use immigration as a big fat voter drive. It's astonishing. I'll actually get calls from reporters from all over the country on any given day of the week, and they will have seen a report that on the rare occasion ICE has actually had the audacity to come out and deport and remove somebody who was illegally residing in a local community. It's simply astonishing to the local media now. They're looking for answers as to why ICE is actually enforcing the law. Man, that is really backwards.
Well, and then people are, how should we put this, are penalized for doing their jobs under this administration.
Well, they certainly are, and it's very demoralizing for the men and women who put their lives on the line at the border. And look, for ICE agents on the interior, look, immigration is a discretionary social policy. It's designed to serve our broad national interest. And, you know, for most of us, and by the way, most countries on planet Earth, that those interests are balancing the supply and the demand for labor by limiting foreign and illegal competition. You protect your national security. You make sure that our limited social services aren't drained dry by excessive levels of immigration. And you protect your natural resources and energy supplies. You know, Kevin, since 2000, which isn't too long ago, we have added 18 million legal and illegal immigrants into the United States. Do the math on that. That's almost five additional Los Angeleses populating the U.S. But over that same period, we've only added about 9 million new jobs. So that equilibrium between the supply and the demand for jobs is way out of whack, and immigration is the big problem. You've got to limit population, limit immigration. Immigration isn't foreign aid. It's not a social justice agenda. It's not a cheap labor supply, and it's not a tool to create millions of instant voters. And the Democrats don't get it, or they reject that concept. And the sad truth appears to be that the Republicans and the Democrats are in the same doggone hot tub on this issue. They refuse to address the president's abuse.
Bob Dane with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning from FAIR. Bob, how do we hold the Republicans accountable?
Well, you do that by the ballot box, but I thought we just did that at the ballot box. Look, the Republicans took a majority in Congress last November. Let's review their history here. And they promised us they would stop Obama's executive abuses on immigration. Well, they folded and gave away their leverage back in December. You remember, not so long ago, they passed the omnibus bill. That was an opportunity to defund the president. But they said, hey, we'll fight this battle in a few months. Well, the few months is now. Well, it was 2 weeks ago, and they failed to deliver on that. So, look, you know, we've got some work. We've got there's plenty that needs to be done, plenty that can be done, and I think most importantly, plenty that the vast majority of the public expect us to do. The next major gain here is probably going to be in the courts. You've got a federal judge that has ruled on the Obama administration's request to lift that injunction. The Obama administration may make an appeal in the Fifth Circuit. I think we need to lean into Congress and tell Congress, look, you guys need to file your own lawsuit. And there's no reason that they couldn't.
Bob Dane, it seems like they're afraid, though, just because they're not so much afraid of the administration, but it goes back to the press, and I don't want to give them too much power, but I'm amazed as someone who has been around for a while, like you, that just the grave distortions going on, and we see culturally through entertainment programs where, you know, the Republicans are always bad, the law enforcement is always bad, the illegals are always good, and then you look at the statistics of the cost, whether it's education, whether it's health care, whether it's anything else, illegal immigration is having a stranglehold on our economy. And getting back to your point where you're talking about jobs, what was it in Tennessee and New Hampshire? Most of the new jobs created went to people that are immigrants, perhaps even illegal immigrants?
Yeah, this is a consequential issue. Immigration affects literally everything else. And by the way, the president's abuse of power on immigration ought to transcend partisan politics. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican, Democrat, or independent. You need to be seriously concerned about the breach of the separation of powers, the abuse of executive authority, because this sets a dangerous precedent for future administrations. But we need to wake up. I mean, Obama has scrapped deportations for literally all illegal aliens except convicted felons. Oh, but wait a second. We see that almost 30,000 of them last year were let go. You've got 12 million illegal aliens in the U.S. It's costing us almost $115 billion a year. There's 375,000 illegal alien court cases. You've got only a handful of judges trying to work through that. You've got a unilateral amnesty for 5 to 7 million illegal aliens on the table. He's rewriting the rules. This is the perfect storm. And then on top of that, we're being lied to that all is well and deportations are at an all-time high. But even that lie is being unveiled because deportations are at an all-time low. We're moving the wrong direction.
More coming up with our friend Bob Dane, Kevin Miller in the morning at 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Bob Dane with us from FAIR. Bob, for people that haven't Googled you and they don't know what your group's about, give us some info on FAIR and your great works.
Yeah, FAIR is the largest immigration reform group in the country. And when we talk about reform, we mean exercising the legal and the ethical and the moral obligation to limit immigration, enforce laws as intended, and approaching what we do with immigration from the standpoint of protecting U.S. workers, taxpayers, our national unity, our language, culture, healthcare systems, and educational system. So, FAIR tries to bring light to the debate, not heat. But on the other hand, on occasion, sometimes politicians only see the light when you exercise heat. So we've got a strong, widespread grassroots mobilization effort always underway, particularly under Barack Obama.
Let's go to the phones, and this is our Megan Kelly, Linda from Emmett. You're on with Bob Dane at 580 KIDO.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning.
Linda. Let's go.
What's the solution? You got to go?
No. What's the question? I was bragging to Bob about how good the callers were, and you got to.
I just blew it. I'm sorry.
It's
I apologize
okay.
From the bottom of my heart.
Oh.
What I wanted to ask was, what's it going to take for the American people to figure out that they need to straighten their backbones and stand up for something, whether it's immigration or whatever? We've got to get together as a country. Granted, the parties are never going to get along. I know that. But we've got to get one singular solution to whether it's people coming up from Mexico and South America, or after the Vietnam War, that we had of the Vietnamese
right,
people.
Right, right. Let's let Bob answer that. That's a good question, Linda.
Okay.
Well, look, I would not say that this is an official FAIR position because we are nonpartisan, but you've got a lot of people in the aftermath of this amnesty, which really was the epitome of a non-representative government. thinking that perhaps a third party, a truly conservative one, appears to be the only solution, at least for those of us who are not going to hold our nose and vote for rhinos who sell us out. I mean, there's a split within the Republican Party between the rhino Republicans who want more immigration to fuel cheap labor and conservatives who understand the consequence of flooding our labor markets. And the one thing I hear over and over and over again, Kevin, is wouldn't you rather lose a few elections while building a new representative conservative coalition than have high hopes and establishment
right.
Republicans only to get the middle finger time after time?
Linda, thank you for the call.
You're welcome. You know, have a good day, gentlemen.
I might say, perhaps tongue-in-cheek, the lesson here is when you have a rogue president like Barack Obama, man, you better make sure you have a supermajority in both houses of Congress to override vetoes or at least 60 votes in the Senate, because short of that, a radical president like Obama illustrates that Congress has no power unless it has the ultimate power.
Quickly to Mike in Boise for Bob Dane at 580KIDO. Hello, Mike.
Yeah. My thought is he is such a rogue president, and impeachment has been talked about. And I think the American people get a grasp of what's going on, because I think they're sick and tired of an open checkbook, everything that comes along. My question is, if he's such a rogue president, how come we just don't strip him of his political powers by his executive orders? Is there a question to that?
That's a good one, Mike. We'll let Bob answer that, and thank you for the call. Now, I know you're a nonpartisan group, but the judges have decided that the president has overreached his boundaries. Of course, that's up for a review and an appeal. What do you think?
I think that's a real option on the table. The U.S. Constitution gives the House of Representatives the sole power to impeach. A simple majority of that chamber is required to approve a single article of impeachment for treason, bribery, other high crimes and misdemeanors. And then the Senate has the sole power to try impeachments. If this goes through the courts, if the federal court judge injunction against the amnesty is upheld, if it goes on appeal and it's upheld, and if it goes to the Supreme Court and they find that the president has overreached his boundaries, but if the president continues to process these amnesty applications, which, by the way, he's already doing, you could very well see that option exercised by the House of Representatives. And I don't see, Kevin, where we'd have much choice.
Bob, how's your clock look? You got time for a couple more?
I'm going to have to run right now, Kevin. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll just take them to myself then. I'll be the expert. Bob, we appreciate it. Bob Dane with us. Thank you for your work.
Yeah, we'll see you here in your nation's capital in about a month from now. Looking forward to it, Kevin.
Yes, Bob, and we're holding the feet to the fire. Thank you for inviting us to go to D.C. to get the answers. We appreciate that, sir.
Okay, my friend. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bob Dane with us. All right, Cindy in Boise, you'll just have to settle for good old Kay Millie at 580KIDO. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning. It's okay. My question for him was... everything has been made to be political when it's not. This is a matter of right and wrong. And I don't understand why people don't get the difference. And so I just kind of want your take as far as this immigration goes. What Obama is doing is not a political thing. It's a matter of fact. Wrong. He is absolutely putting us in danger, and I don't know what part of that people don't understand in Washington.
Well, Cindy, thank you. I agree with you on that, and the bottom line is they've sold out to the corporate interest. They've sold out to the Chamber of Commerce. They've sold out to big money, and they don't care. I've lived in areas that have been destination states where you have driver's licenses, mortgages given to people that are here illegally. I'll tell you, in Raleigh, North Carolina, one day a cop pulls up to they're renovating the stadium of the NC State Wolfpack. I kid you not, over half the workers ran into the woods because they thought it was an ICE raid.
Oh, my word. Well, I guess we have it fairly good here so far, huh?
We're very blessed, all things considered, but that might be changing. Cindy, thank you, ma'am.
All right. Have a good day.
Okay, we appreciate it. Eric in Boise with Kevin Miller. Good morning, sir.
Morning. what I want to know is if everybody is tired of and sick and tired of what's going on with Congress and everything, why do everybody keep voting for everybody? Quit voting. If you quit voting, they can't get in office.
That's a good point. I think we're getting tired of being lied to.
Well, yes, we are. I got a person that will sit there and promise me everything under the moon. And the only reason he wants to lie to me is because he wants his butt on a nice oak chair. That's it. He's lying to me. He's lying to you. Your vote was bought. He was in office before your vote went in. That's our problem, is the electoral vote.
And that's why we need people like you, Eric, to tell the truth, and to people like you listening now. Thank you for the call, sir. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And we're joined by the Twitter-friendly Rachel Sutherland of Fox News Radio, at Sutherland. At Sutherland Fox, correct? Is that your Twitter handle?
That is my Twitter handle, at Sutherland Fox. Thanks for the plug.
Hey, you know, when we're going back and forth tweeting during this interview segment, you know, sometimes I can do that. I can do that with you. Other times I'll get distracted tweeting while I'm supposed to be interviewing, and it never ends well for me, but it's all about
we'll see how it goes. this is practice.
I see. So let's talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton and the emails. Did she break the law? I guess it depends on who you talk to.
Well, right. Well, let's separate out a few things here, because the law is obviously different than policy at the Department of the State Department. Looking back at the law and doing some research, the law changed in 2014 as far as records keeping is concerned. So while she was Secretary of State, no, I mean, officially she didn't break any laws. Did she break policy? Yes. Are people looking at her as sort of a hypocrite? Possibly, kind of a do as I say, not as I do situation, because, of course, Fox uncovered a 2011 State Department cable where she directed State Department employees not to use personal email while she herself was doing that very thing.
She had a news conference. How has that been received in Washington?
Oh, not very well. This was after a speech to the United Nations, a women's speech, and she then took the podium about 40 minutes later at the UN, kind of an interesting venue for this, but where else is she going to do it? And she said that, yes, she used a private email. Yes, she had a private server, and that she fully intended to keep that server private. And so that's really riled up Republicans like Trey Gowdy, who's heading up this select committee on Benghazi. He's saying that they want a third party looking at that server, and she's basically saying, no way, Jose.
That's the story, I guess, how we advance the story, where we have Trey Gowdy now, who has known about this, I guess, for 6 months, who says that the emails are not all there, and he wants all of them. And people will go back and forth about Benghazi, but four American lives were lost, and we should know everything. And I'm sorry to run on here, Rachel, at 580KIDO, but it's, you know, you also have the revealing in the press conference where she was talking about that she emailed her husband, but he's only emailed twice, and then she had emails with the president. How's the White House handling this?
Oh, yeah, it was interesting watching the White House briefing yesterday. Press Secretary Josh Earnest was kind of just shrugging his shoulders and saying that he wasn't particularly interested in discussing Hillary Clinton's emails any further. He had enough. And he was referring questions to the State Department, referring questions to the Clintons themselves. That would be interesting. You know, they're just going to pick up the phone and chat right with any of us, I'm sure, at any moment. But the White House is sort of over it.
Indeed. Where do you think this goes from here? You know, if laws were broken, I suppose we should know. But on the other hand, you have such effective talking points on the pro-Clinton camp. It's like 1995 all over again. And I'm going to redeem myself right now, Rachel, with you, because I watched Fox News Sunday, and it was must-see television between Lanny Davis and Chris Wallace.
Well, it really was. I watched that as well, and actually talked to Lanny Davis myself earlier in the week, just because, I mean, I thought, well, of course my colleague Chris Wallace did a fabulous job, but I just had some more questions. So, Lanny, I said, well, hey, why did Secretary Clinton use a private email? And he actually said, he gave the reason that she gave. He said, well, you know, I don't really know for sure, but it was probably out of convenience. And so I just thought that was interesting. And he also said that he didn't think it was going to impact her race, not for a nanosecond, he said. So, I mean, look, the Clintons have survived worse. They could survive a nuclear blast. I don't know if they're part cockroach or what. They just keep on going.
Ooh.
That was meant as a, that was not meant as an insult. I myself, being part cockroach, I survived quite a bit.
Oh, boy. I just love this fire in the belly here, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
I don't have a fire in the belly.
Now, was your interview with Lanny as contentious as it was with Chris Wallace? Did you find him credible?
That's not my style. I find I track more bees with honey usually in an interview. I found him to be what I expected him to be, which is a Clinton defender.
Right. But wasn't that wild during that interview where, you know, if you'd let me finish, and don't you get tired of defending the Clintons? It was just,
That was a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is what this guy does now.
Right.
I mean, he's a lawyer, but what else is he going to do?
Sure. Yeah.
Part of his life calling.
I just hope that we get to the truth of the matter and the, you know, the idea that, as you've reported, everybody at the State Department had to follow a certain set of rules, and the Madam Secretary followed different ones.
Well, that's right. I mean, again, it's do as I say, not as I do. And people don't like that. No one ever likes that. But will it derail her for the presidential campaign? I don't know. I mean, we still have a ways to go. And if history repeats itself, they were able to survive Whitewater, Monica Lewinsky. I don't know. Can you name all the scandals from the 90s?
Well, Troopergate, commodities.
They're still going, though.
Yeah.
Going strong. U.S. Senator from New York, she was able to become. Secretary of State. This has not hurt the Clintons whatsoever. I don't know.
We'll see. To be continued, and I really want the yoga workout.
Well, that's one thing Trey Gowdy said. He did make me laugh when he said he wasn't interested in Hillary's workout routine.
Rachel Sutherland, thank you, ma'am. There we have it, Rachel Sutherland. And if you follow at Kevin Miller Show, at 580KIDO on Twitter, you hear that right now, we're tweeting back and forth, or at Sutherland on Fox or Sutherland Fox, you'll see the tweeting as we're talking. Focus on your day job. Good point, Sweet William. We go to the phones, and we go to Jim in Meridian.
Good morning,
Jim. Hi.
Good morning, Kevin. Just wanted to say I appreciate Rachel's comment about the cockroach part, that probably they're mostly cockroach.
Tell you what, Rachel might get in trouble for that one. She kind of let that fly. I certainly hope not. It begs the question, though, at 580KIDO, that you've got the White House not interested in the emails. You've got, I mean, does everything have to be talking points? Can't we just say the code was violated, ethics were violated, laws were violated, and if they weren't, we'll give her her day in court instead of it's the right-wing agenda, it's the conspiracy? That's what's hurting this country, these stupid talking points defending what I believe, in my own opinion, is the indefensible.
I believe you're correct.
Jim, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right, our great friend Jim in Meridian. Coming up next, no teacher pay increase yet at the State House. We do ask the question, what should we pay our teachers? And the new plan to raise your gas tax. It's not over yet. And the mainstream press, our cousins, I guess we could call them, not our brothers and sisters, maybe our adopted cousins, if you will, I don't know, that are in the press, the Idaho Press Corps, that's it, the Idaho Press Corps will continue to move this story, but it's important that we show you what the people in Boise are up to. I always like it when I watch a story or I read a story where they go, oh, those conservative Idaho legislators. It's tough to pass anything in the conservative Idaho legislature. Our roads are falling apart. Now, with all due respect to what's going on the roads and the bridges and everything else, yeah, they need to be repaired. But what is our gas money being used for? If we have more vehicles, don't we have more revenue? Oh, those conservatives. Oh, they don't want to raise taxes. It would be difficult to get anything through the Idaho House and Senate. And oh, that Butch Otter. He won't sign it. Have you noticed that lately? And yes, I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't have a life. In fact, my calling with you is that I read the unreadable, I watch the unwatchable, and talk about it to you in an entertaining and compelling way so that you can have a life. So my life revolves around not having a life, and I'm fine with that. But I've noticed lately, again and again and again, creeping opinions, editorials in news reporting here in the Treasure Valley. Oh, those conservatives, they will not let the gas tax pass. Oh, it will be very difficult for the hearing for the words. Oh, another pro-gun legislation here. Oh, Idaho. Oh, Idaho. I'm just thinking to myself, man, can't we get a break? If our own media beats up on the legislature for not passing a gas tax, I think that's a good thing, right? What do you think? 580-5436, 580-KIDO, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. That's if you'd like to comment on these stories and more. And, you know, are you down with the gas tax? I'll go over the details next. But back to, I just look at the tone and the tenure. You've noticed this. The roads and the bridges are in need of desperate repair. Now, my old days when I was a journalist with the Army, it would be politicians say that the roads and bridges are in need of repair. Like we had Mayor Nankolas on. He said that. I didn't say that, and I'm not even a reporter. Save the opinions for the commentators and have the reporting for the reporters. It's kind of like Nancy Grace. I'm the lawyer. You're the reporter. You're the reporter, and I'm the commentator, right? Let's hear from you next. Time for Traffic Now.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
The authors of the bill, in an effort to justify its very existence, talk of accountability for teachers. And I can't argue with that. I can argue, however, that accountability is a two-way street. As teachers, we were promised that we would be taken care of once the state recovered from the recent recession. So I ask, where is the state's accountability to its educators in the proposed action?
Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO, a little Hall & Oates with you. Phone number is 580-5436. Big hearings going on concerning what to pay educators. Other news of the day that we're going to get into. Is it time to raise the gas tax? And we are the reddest of the red states.
We're the reddest of the red state in the United States of America. Let's stay that way.
I remember Thank that you. Night. Governor Otter, very victorious. Very victorious there. That was, by the way, that was Governor Otter and also a teacher, Tom Venderen of Pocatello, 19 years teaching. Let's see. We have John sending us something from Megyn Kelly. Look, Megyn Kelly is great, but she's no Linda from Emmett, Bob. Let's get to this issue involving the gas tax, though. A plan before your conservative legislature. $262 million. The maintenance gap for the roads, the bridges, the repairs that need to happen. Remember, the governor said,
the biggest ticket item in our infrastructure inventory is our long-term multi-billion-dollar investment in Idaho's roads and bridges. And if Idaho learns means anything at all, it's time for us to address that elephant in the room.
That is the elephant in the room. Now, we have reached out to all these folks that have sponsored the bill, that are pushing the bill and everything else, and they've no-showed us. That's right. They've no-showed us. We have John Vanderwood, who we've had on this program before. I believe he's a great friend of our friend Russ Fulcher, saying in the paper, I haven't nailed down consensus yet. He's the majority caucus chair, presented the bill to the House Ways and Means Committee. It voted unanimously to interest the bill, which goes to the House Transportation Committee for hearings. Now, here's the thing about this. We can get a bill to raise gasoline prices and hose us here in Idaho, but we can't get a bill to represent gun owners. Just a thought. His bill seeks to raise more than $120 million for transportation, a 5-cent increase in gas and diesel taxes, bringing the price per gallon to 30 cents, a 20% hike. By the way, you better do it quickly because gas prices are rising. A 2-cent transfer tax increase on all fuels to 3 cents a gallon, a 25% across-the-board increase in vehicle registration fees for a newer passenger vehicle that would increase the fee from 48 to 60 bones. Welcome to Montana! Additional fees for large trucks and electric and hybrid vehicles. So wait a minute. The president says you get a tax break for an electric or hybrid, and now we're going to penalize the folks that are saving the planet? More on this coming up. 49 in Caldwell. Kevin Miller. 6:59. We're just getting started. Time to get up and start the day, everybody. Kevin Miller in the morning. 580 KIDO. We'll talk more about the gas tax, teacher pay, ISIS, all that before 9 a.m. before Mr. Beck arrives. Keep it here. Stay informed. KIDO.